Welcome to Playful Beginnings, a podcast about the magic of play therapy for therapists, students, and anyone interested. In our podcast, we'll explore the deeper understanding of play therapy and the skills we use when working with children.
We hope to help you understand the why behind what we do and how it helps kids heal and grow. I'm Dr. Christy Opiola, a working play therapist and university professor in North Carolina.
I'm Dr. Maggie Parker, a play therapist and professor in DC.
Hello. Hi. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm going to be honest. I'm just surviving. I feel like our recent podcasts have had the same theme. It's a hard time right now. And so I think that might be my baseline for a little bit, but I'm glad to be here. I'm glad to see you. And I'm glad to talk to our play therapy space people.
Yeah, I think something that I've realized, I think, about both of us is that we are, if something happens in our lives, just as humans, or even like within our realm of our work, right? Usually our first response is like, okay, what's going on with me? What did I bring to this situation? And I don't know about you, but I tend to take a lot of personal responsibility. Like, I've done something wrong. I'm doing this wrong. Like, I'm not this. And it's really hard sometimes to separate, right? And when Dr. Ahu Line was on, she was talking about how she's a pleaser and a superiority, and I'm the same. And so my first instinct is like, how can I make you like me? And then when people tell me that I'm not smart or I shouldn't be listened to or whatever, then I'm like, let me tell you how smart I am. And it's not a good place to be.
It sounds crazy, but I'm a pleaser and a comfort. Those are my two priorities. So like I work to please. And then when it's not working, I hide and go to my comfort places.
Yeah, I know. Right now I'm like ready.
Talking about these are the Adlerian personality profiles. And sometimes they're represented by animals. Sometimes we use words, whatever they are. And you tend to have like a primary and a secondary. We use all of them, but we tend to have primaries and secondaries. And so, yeah.
Dr. Delina Dillman Taylor has written a couple articles on this. And this was her focus of her dissertation. So I highly encourage you guys to look at it. It's really interesting to think about just as a human, like, okay, I'm responding to this because I'm trying to please. Yeah. And then that's not working. And so I'm going to do this. But I think it's something that it's important to remember context and just remember, no matter, I guess I'm telling this to myself, and if this resonates with anybody, it's like, you can do the best that you can do. And you try and be as kind and caring and supportive. And sometimes that's just not going to be heard or experienced.
Yeah. And I think sometimes other people's, I don't know the word I want, like suitcases full of stuff also get opened, right? Like how they respond to us might actually be how they're responding to other things as well. That's just not a direct response to you or I, or, you know, to anyone. Maybe they're carrying the weight on their shoulder and therefore we get the brunt of it. But it is hard to always get the brunt when the other thing I think Maggie and I have shared, we are huge empaths. Like we run from feeling. And we're aware of it, but it also, you know, like I can't not feel when things like this happen. And so how I internalize that or how I show that or whatever is going to come out because that's where I'm driven from. Some people are driven from thought, so they're going to rationalize it, right? But I think that's also, you know, like when we've got these personality profiles, that really impacts when pleasing is one of your stronger personality profiles.
Yeah.
Feeling then also ignites some of those like narratives we tell each other. But please know.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, Maggie, myself, hold grace for yourself, right? Like take a deep breath. It's okay to have awareness of this and it still impact you, right? It's what we do with that impact that's the most important. How are we internalizing that message? Is it reinforcing our, you know, like conditions placed on us and therefore that really pushes us? Is it something that we're working hard to push back on? You know, like just be honest with yourself, have grace for yourself, give yourself a little bit of forgiveness. And if you need to, advocate for yourself.
And I think like as play therapists and supervisors and teachers, right? It's like at times we have to give difficult to hear feedback. And I think that no matter how we couch it or intend it, sometimes that's not wanted. And so it can be difficult. And so, yeah.
And not heard from a place of like true sincerity and like best intentions.
And I think this is like a helpful kind of segue into what we wanted to talk about, because this is something that I hear from a lot of play therapists, and that I have a pretty, you know, a viewpoint. And when I share it, I think sometimes people don't, I don't know, their reactions to it. So I feel like this is like somewhat of a controversial topic, even though it doesn't feel super controversial because of our rootedness in theory. But we wanted to talk about having games or books and such in the playroom.
Yeah.
So, a lot of thoughts.
So from a child-centered perspective, the reason games are often not in the playroom is because they have specific ways you're supposed to play with them. So they lack the opportunity for a child to lead the activity and be able to potentially change the activity, in particular when we look at certain age groups, right? Because developmentally, we know some age groups that need for right and wrong to be rule binding is really strong. So if you're using games as your main modality in the playroom, it's often because you're driving the content. And so that's where games don't fit, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the playroom is that it just lacks the freedom and the opportunity for kids to be creative.
Yeah, because it's a set way to do things. And there are a lot of people who really like games. And I've had games in the playroom. I've worked in spaces where they had a lot of games, and I try to like, you know, like sequester them off so they're not visible. But if they were found by the child and I've told them, and here, you can play with all of these things in a lot of ways that you would like to, then I feel beholden to allow them to explore those things. And then I have to work on myself as to how do I reflect in a way that continues to align with what it is that we're doing together and the core messages that I want to send. And how do I keep myself as a competitive person?
That's what I was thinking, space. Like, or a rule binding person, right?
Right?
Like, just know who you are. If you're gonna, if you choose to put games in the playroom, you have to understand how you're gonna respond in moments. And I too have a space that is not mine alone. So it's a shared space, and my office partner does utilize games. And so my clients find them, right? I try not to make them super visible, but they're findable. I'm also not going to be like secretively stashing them, you know, under the couch or under, you know, like in a lockbox. I don't have the time to do that, or the memory to remember where I stashed them and hid them.
Right.
I'm going to be totally honest, but you know, it happens, but I have to know how I'm going to respond to games so I can be competitive. I was a level one athlete.
State champion swimmer backstroke.
Way long ago.
That's a big deal. I'm just saying.
No, district, not state. You know, collegiate athlete, all that stuff. So I do have a competitive nature. I like to win, right? And how do I navigate that in a playroom? And also not just jump to how I would play a game. Like, where do I allow the child to continue to lead if games have rules and, you know, like there's a certain way. And trust me, when you're constantly returning responsibility, the game becomes real unfun.
Yes. You get to decide.
Like, what should I do next? What card should I play? They're like, just play the game. And I'm like, oh, no. We don't have games in the playroom. Right? And I've also played, like, I have like a tween that I see in play therapy, right? She prefers the activity play kind of work in the playroom. And it's not uncommon for us to play cards. Right. And I just kind of put cards out. I don't strive to win. If cards are there, I play them. If not, right. But she has a real desire to win. She is also super competitive. And so what I'm doing is I'm often reflecting like her need to win, her desire, her frustration that I had a card that she had been looking for. So you do have to like figure out how you're going to navigate that space. And the response is if it's in your playroom and you are going to use them, right? Navigate how you're going to do that. And that may be great conversations and role playing with your supervisor sometimes. So like, let's play this out. What is this going to look like? How do I respond in these moments? So that we can keep the child in the lead, right? Where it's not about winning or losing. We're not reinforcing maybe a narrative that's really strong. We're being developmentally responsible, all of these things that we need to be mindful of in this material in the play space.
Yeah. When it's also, I have to, it's just hard for me personally to navigate because I don't also want them to think that I'm like dumbing down, right?
And being authentic, right?
And being authentic. And I'm like, oh, and can I tell you the worst thing that I've ever, like, oh, a child had, there was chess in the room and I have no idea how to play chess. And so then this child's teaching me how to play chess and I'm starting to get it. And then the rules shifted and I was like, oh, wait, what? And then I was like, oh, you decided to change the rules, right? So it's like, I'm having to come back to this. And then I get into the game. So I've stopped focusing on the child and instead I'm focusing on where to move.
Because you're learning something new.
Because I'm learning something new and I'm like trying to figure it out and I missed something and I lost epically and it surprised me. But it was an authentic reaction in that moment. But it was an authentic reaction for my experience, not the child's experience. If I had been focusing on the child, it would have been like, oh, you had to move up your sleeve.
Figured it out. Yeah.
You figured out how to do it. You're so proud of yourself. And that's why I really struggle. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm laughing because I had a kiddo that tried to teach me chess. And it's like, my dad plays chess. He's tried to teach me in the past. I just don't have any interest and really haven't gotten it, but it was really important to him. So I was trying to learn, but he taught me on a whiteboard.
Oh, sweet thing.
I know. So every time, so then he would erase the whole board and start over. And then I'm like, I don't have anything to reference. I don't. And you know, they're all circles. So like, I don't know which one's the king, the queen, the knights, they're just all the same circles on the thing, but I'm supposed to just automatically know because it was important. It was something of big interest to him and just cute. And we'll talk about this in another podcast. But so then he asked if he could bring his iPad in. And I was like, oh, and he said to me, I know electronics are not allowed in the playroom, but I really want to bring this in. And I just heard him out. And he's like, because there's a chess game on there and it could help you so we could actually play a true match.
Sweet. Because right now you're really, you're a big old goose egg.
Help I could get to play chess. And I like just couldn't say no, so I allowed it in. But we'll talk about that in a future podcast. We've had some requests to talk about like the use of electronics or digital play, you know, like from a child-centered perspective. But I just remember I'm giggling because I needed all the help I could get and he still blew me out of the water, which was totally fine. But I just giggled because he really wanted to play a competitive game of chess and I just wasn't meeting his need for competitive chess.
Yeah.
Right. It's the only time he brought it in and then we never played chess again because it really didn't fit his need.
Yeah.
And
It
I
wasn't helping.
Yeah, he needed to find a good chess partner.
I'm still bad at chess, even though you're working so hard to teach me. This is so important to you. You are so frustrated that I just don't understand. Sometimes there are things that we just can't do. And that's
okay. He just started hitting the help button on the thing before I even had a chance to start. So I wouldn't have some indicator of what. I mean, it's such a. I'm going to be honest, it was like real heartwarming. He really like, this is a kid who had a really hard time connecting and had some other, you know, stuff going on. And so like, it was really ability to relate. This is also the kid who taught me Japanese.
Oh.
Yeah. In two sessions. And then I could not speak fluent Japanese. So, right. Like he was really figuring out how to relate to people. And I was kind of like a tester because he was having, you can guess, difficulty with his peers too. It was just real sweet, but it brings heartwarming memories, even though it was like, I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna understand chess.
And it's hard to, like, I had a student who was like working in a school and there was a child that was like really young for to be school aged, right? You know, it's like right at the cusp and really struggling, like big time struggles, very and a lot. And so the child went to them and started playing a game. And my student was like, and they cheated. And I was like, yeah. And they're like, so I told them they cheated. And I was like, okay, help me understand, like, what is the goal of that? Like, what is your purpose? And I think this is where it kind of takes us out of this idea, like we're entering into the child's space because the game is real to us. And the game is like real because it says like what to do in the game, but they're going to adapt the game based upon their developmental level. And that gives you great information.
And their need, right? Like this kid had
Right.
a need to feel competent and to win. And, you know, maybe that helped their self-efficacy and other stuff. It causes trouble when they have that strong need in other places. So I feel like it sometimes does put us in a double bind, right? Because we want to allow like ultimate freedom and we understand where this causes conflict outside. And so, like, which one do you work on, right? Because parents are going to want you to work on the outside problems that they're no fun to play games with. Right? And in therapy, you know, like we're boosting self-efficacy, self-esteem, right? Like and really hearing like the underlying need of the child with the hope that as they have more recognition that they have a strong need to win and other stuff, right? That then they can kind of figure out how to navigate that outside when they just don't win at everything.
Right.
You know, and so it can be really hard.
It can be really hard. It makes me laugh. Last episode, you were talking about how like Bailey, your dog, is child-centered, right? And so it's hard sometimes to separate ourselves. So when I'm with the kids, with my children and my husband, and we play games, and my kids change the rules and all this stuff, I'm like, oh, you really want to win. It's important to you. You figured out a way to do this. You didn't like the way this was going. And Lee's like, I play to win.
Well, and a life lesson, right? Like, what is our goal here?
And they're, he was like, you can't let them change the rules because they can't go to school and just change the rules. And I'm like, I don't care about the rules. Like, this isn't important to me. And like, now that they're getting a little older, it's like happening. And so we have like, we got a new foosball game. And I'm not like, I've never been good at this game. I don't quite understand it. It goes too fast for my like brain to catch up with. But my son was like, I'm gonna beat you. And I was like, watch out. What you don't know is mommy's competitive. And I won. And he was like, another one. And I was like, okay. And then it was like, I won like 2 out of 3. And I was like, yes. And I'm like, who am I? Like, oh my God.
But that's okay, right?
I
Like,
beat my 9-year-old.
but in the same hand, right?
Right?
That's, you can't be a child-centered play
All
therapist
the time.
24/7 with your kids, right? Like, that does also not help them, right? There's a reason therapy is only 60 minutes once a week, maybe twice a week, right? Like, if your kids need that level of intense support, right? That looks different. You have healthy kids.
Yes. Well, I mean, but yeah, no, they're wonderful.
Yeah, they're wonderful and they're doing well and it's okay to be competitive with them, right? And they saw a different side of you.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, yeah, it's just really funny how, and it's also based on development too, right? Like when they were younger, I was like, okay, they're like right and wrong. And now we're really in like industry and inferiority, and they're really struggling. Like, if they're not really great at something right away, what does that mean about them? And so, if I had just been like, whatever, you know, like then there would be frustration that I wasn't being authentic or real. And then we had the conversation of like, you did not expect me to win. That you didn't like that.
Up, right? Like, so it wasn't like you rubbed it in his face and was like, da, da, da. You know, yeah, that's, I know you. I know that's not how that went. Maybe instantaneously, you know, like in the moment it did. Then there's like other parts that go with that. And I also think outside of the play space, it's important for kids to know their strengths and their weaknesses. We aren't all good at everything. And, you know, we want kids to feel accomplished. And I think just out from our, like a heart space, right? From like for all aspects of their life. But the reality is, there's things I'm better at and there's things that I'm not as strong at. And it helps me to be a more balanced person by understanding both sides of that.
Yeah. And I think like the real thing, like when I think about games in the playroom and the play spaces like this, is like, what need is this meeting and how am I showing up? Is this about me or is this about the child? And I think that's where it gets really tricky. And as a child-centered play therapist, I really don't think that they're necessary. I've seen how in spaces where there aren't games, that they create games for themselves and they're pretty creative in the way that they engage with those. And they asked me to do it, like be a part of it too. And so then I have to be authentic, right? And so like whether it's hide and seek, and I'm not s as tall as you are, but I'm like fairly tall. I'm 5'7". And so it's like when you have like a playroom, there are only so many spaces I can go. It's like there are only so many pillows I can try and like put over myself. And so it's like, okay, you found me. Like, but I'm still trying, right? I'm trying to do what it is that they're asking me to do in the best way that I can, and then reflecting if they're disappointed in that. Or like, I don't know about you, how many times do you have kids like who play ball a lot? Or like catching game?
Games, or I have like it's like a soft paddle that has like this little ball that like floats back and forth. So there's no like real winner or loser to the activity. It's about competence, it's about ability. And yeah, sometimes it turns into competitive. Like I have a kiddo who keeps score, but I also love it because I have seen this client grow from keeping score and having to win, right? To like giving grace. So like they'll hit something that's not reachable, or there would be no way I could get it. And the client should get a point, right? And she's like, that was really unfair. Right. So then I'm seeing like, what does equity look like in the playroom? What do these things look like in the playroom? And the toy was put in there more for like child engagement, but there are two paddles. So that it could be relational. It could be like a back and forth type of thing. So like part of me was, this is relationship building. It could be a relationship building, right? The intent wasn't competition. Clients might take it there just based on their age or their need or, you know, like the way they play.
You know, this is also a point where I think like there are certain things that natural talent will get you certain space, right? So like we're really, as a parent, I'm dealing with this. And then it becomes about practice, right? Like writing, math, like all of that, then it becomes practice. And so are you going to give up if you don't get it right away? Are you going to keep trying and keep practicing and that endurance and that perseverance? And I see a lot of that in that age group. And so when I'm seeing kids who are struggling with perfectionism, which happens all of the time in the space where I am, there are high expectations. It was interesting. I got a cricket bat instead of like a baseball bat because I wanted it to be more kind of inclusive, and then kids were able to use it as they wanted to. And it was like so many sessions with kids where they would just try and see how many times they could bounce the ball and which balls could bounce better and which did this. And like, can I beat my next thing? And they're like, keep score. And I'm like, okay. And so it's like every time they hit the ball, I'd be like, one, two, three, four. Oh my goodness, you did it 4 times. And like, my genuine excitement that came out for them when they like got up to 10, I'm like, oh my gosh, you're so. Stop me work so hard, you know, and is it skill? Not really. Like it's, but they just kept trying, and that was really important. Like you just kept going. It was important for you to see, you know, what you're capable of. You didn't give up. I don't know.
Yeah, I know I'm a little distracted because I was looking for something from Ray. I know in her advanced play therapy book, she outlines some guidelines for choosing and selecting toys. Let's see if I can.
Here it is, the book we're talking about if you're watching.
Oh, I was actually thinking of the advanced play
Oh,
one.
the other book. Oh, yeah.
Let me
That one's
see.
upstairs.
Hey. Advanced play therapy. Sorry, as we film this on our computers, know, I have access to all this stuff. Here it is. To look on it online, because I do think it's helpful to be thoughtful of this. As you're putting games in the playroom, right? Like, we do want to make sure they're culturally responsive. We want to make sure, like, the accessibility, not just for kids to get to them, is it developmentally responsible for them? Like, are they capable of understanding access to the toys? Also, if you have topics that you want us to cover, don't hesitate to send them to info@playtherapyspace.com. Maggie and I can talk about anything. So, have at it.
If we can't, we'll bring someone on who we think can. And if there's anybody that you really are like, I want to hear, da 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 da, let us know and we'll do our best. We have a pretty vast network.
And we're not afraid to ask.
No, that is definitely true. I
Yeah.
cold call people all the time, like, I'm
Maggie's
really
not afraid
curious.
to ask anyone. The turtle in me is more like, do I know them? What will they say to me?
Yeah, that's what I do. And then as soon as I like get them on the phone and I'm asking them questions, I'm like, I realize how vulnerable I'm being right now. I'm literally telling someone that I don't know the answer, but
Because we shouldn't know all the answers. But yeah. Tap into us. We look forward to seeing you at our next podcast. And again, let us know how we can support you.
thanks, Christy.
Maggie.
Bye.